Alrighty, well, my name is Alan Vincelette, and I'm from St. John's Seminary. It's the seminary for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, so we train the Catholic priests from Southern California and other areas, and it's a little colder here than it would be at home, so I'm getting used to that, but actually, I like it cold. And so when I was coming through the border here, I drove here because I like to stop at wineries for one thing and hike for another. And then I have relatives in Montana and Seattle. And then I drove up. And so as I'm coming through the border into Canada, the guards were, asking me what I'm doing here and, asking a lot of questions. And they're like, now, what are you doing? Giving a paper on what? Oh, on Thomas of Ireland's Lamata on Amor Caritas Dilexio in the Niblos form. And right away, they let me in. No one could make that up. So I'm going to talk about that and the sources he utilizes, the emphases he stresses, or the tradition that he inherited stresses and the influence. Okay. So from Los Angeles, it's kind of very Hollywood oriented. And so in fact, one of my coworkers was he starred in movies as like an Italian mafia hitman. So the students are never late to his class. But he loves movies, and so this is a not his quote, but a quote that he would like. So this is from Steve Erickson in Neverland, and in LA, occasionally the word Florets is used for movie storyboards. Not that common, but at least this author does. And he talks about this movie Dune, which was going to come out. They're going to use this storyboard of Alejandro Jodorowsky. And they decided not to use it, and they redid Dune, and people say it was a disaster, the new movie. But his storyboard was used by all kinds of other films. And so images and motifs from his storyboard appear in Alien, Blade Runner, Terminator, Matrix, Star Wars, Flash Gordon, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And so it had a great influence. He goes on to say, even a failed project can have a great influence. And so I'm going to talk about a similar influence of a floret from Thomas of Ireland. I don't know if it was a failed project. If he tried to reform the clergy, we know like a few years later, John of Burden kind of left Paris in disgrace, seemingly. And some sources say he may have had an affair with the queen, may not be legitimate. But anyway, he did try maybe to help his students have a better spiritual and more moral life. And probably some success, but as human nature goes, not always. So I'm going to talk about then these 108 florets on love in Thomas of Ireland. So mainly Amor, Dilexio, and Caritas. And he's very comprehensive. I mean, he writes about everything you could think of on love, on cupiditas, concupiscentia, amicitia, libido, liberalitas. So very comprehensive. About the only thing he might have added would be one on benevolentia, but he does throw quotes on that into, for instance, his Amicitia. So pretty much he covers the whole gamut of different conceptions of love in the Middle Ages. There are really three main sources he utilizes here, the big three. So Augustine, Gregory the Great, and Bernard of Clairvaux. And they make up 58% of the citations on love. So I'm excluding Amicitia here. And he even tried to quote them more, but misattributed some things to them. If we take it into account, he tried to quote them 60% of the time in his citations. So very, a lot of sources drawn from Augustine, Gregory the Great, and Bernard. And this colors kind of the themes of love that he's going to then pick out. There are a few minor sources, Jerome 4 times, Ambrose 2 times, Peter Chrysologus a couple times, and Cassiodorus. And then I just quoted once, right? Harry Nilsson's song, One's a Lonely Number, kind of alone by themselves are Fulgentius Leo the Great and Hugh of St. Victor in praise of charity. And that's an interesting thing, too, because Hugh had written a lot of little works on love, on the bride and the bridegroom, the nature of love, a number of others, and he doesn't quote any of those works on love, nor does he quote Richard of St. Victor either. So I'll talk about that a little bit later. He even quotes a few classical authors like Cicero, Seneca. Seneca famously said, if you want to be loved, loved. Love, if you want to be loved, then he references that. And Virgil says, love conquers all very famously. He doesn't directly quote Virgil, but that phrase will appear in quotes coming from Augustine and others, so indirectly. And so I'm going to. move on to here. Now, what comes out in terms of the kind of love he likes to talk about? Well, he places a lot of stress on the excellence and power of love. So 30 citations talk about love is so great and powerful, referencing kind of the idea of St. Paul and others. He loves to talk about love as very easy. Christ said, my yoke is easy. He picks up on that. It's very sweet and joyful. So 14 citations. And love unifies. Those are kind of his three major themes. He does spend a lot of time talking about love of God above all things. Love a neighbor, where we must love the neighbor in a patient way. Be patient, following Paul again. Supportive, kind of help them carry their burdens. Be helpful, beneficent. And he loves to talk, too, about fraternal correction. So I think four or so times he talks about how there's a need for fraternal correction. And that may hint at his audience, perhaps, at least there with some of his student concerns of correcting each other as fellow students. He also loves to talk about the relation of love of God and love of neighbor as well. So let me kind of detail some of his quotes on these things. Love is excellent and powerful, he says. It overcomes all obstacles. It purifies us from any kind of concupiscence of the flesh. And it also makes us obsess over the loved object. And he kind of quotes all those kind of themes in love. And so, not surprisingly, he begins with Hugh of St. Victor's In Praise of Charity here, via quote in Caritas AC. I do not know if I can say anything greater in your praise than that you draw God from heaven and elevate the human from the earth to heaven. Your great virtue, that is to say love, is that you through God is brought, through you, God is brought all the way down to this level, and the humans lifted up all the way to that level. And so he goes on to talk about how love is a great thing, quoting Peter of Blois in De Lectio Y, although he attributes it to someone else. Love alone is what is for the fortuitous event, does not alter, what a bodily separation does not divide, what a span of time does not abolish, what will not succumb to a defect or failure. And so he's really stressing how powerful love would be. Then he intends to reference St. Basil, but he doesn't. He mistakenly attributes something to him. And this is a quote which the source has not yet found. So, Chris, you have some work to do there.
Oh, just a little.
Love of the highest good is a sweet and great ointment by which the pestilence of the mind are healed and the eyes of the heart illuminated. Love is also so powerful, it makes us obsess over what we love. And here he quotes, perhaps, Chris as Jerome, and I'm going to take you, I didn't look at that, so I'll take your word on that. Love cannot think about any other thing than what it loves. So love is very powerful, very great. It just focuses our attention on what we love. And that's a very common theme in Thomas of Ireland. Now, what probably interested me the most in starting this work, and I thank Chris for inviting me up here, and I forgot to mention, I've done work on different aspects of love over the years. So actually, I started out, I translated a book from French to English by a Jesuit on medieval theories of love, and I've been writing on different topics subsequently. And most recently, fortuitously, I wrote an article on love for the New Catholic Encyclopedia. And so a lot of the research I'd done kind of was able to go into this work here. So it was really interesting because he over and over again, Thomas of Ireland stresses how love is easy. Love is sweet. And so he tries to reference Augustine's Confessions here, but he actually doesn't. That's okay. But it's a similar Augustinian kind of theme. And so the quote from Amor I is true love does not feel bitterness, but sweetness, because the sister of love is sweetness. Now, this will be an interesting phrase, which we'll see, because this phrase, the sister love, is very unique, and so is able to kind of search and kind of find the influences to tracking that phrase down in later literature. He also quotes Augustine rightly this time, that one who loves does not labor. Every labor is not grievous to lovers. Love alone is what is not ashamed of the name of difficulty. And so a nice quote about how love is easy. And then Jerome says something similar. He references that in Amor T, Nothing is hard for lovers, no labor difficult. Let us love Christ, every difficult thing will seem easy. And he repeats these themes over and over again. Should be 1D, ad nauseum. So he quotes now, really not Bernard of Clairvaux, in Amor Ei. O yoke of holy love, how sweetly you seize, gloriously you ensnare, pleasantly you press, delightfully you load, strongly you bind, wisely you educate. Now he's getting kind of cloying because it's getting really sweet. The love quotes here, our love is sweet. And he quotes, intends to quote Rabanus Maris, but doesn't. Divine love is a fire, a light, a honey, a wine, a sun. It's wine in contemplation, inebriating the mind with its pleasant and agreeable delight. Right. And actually what's interesting is, I think I may have tracked this source down, but I think you can double check that for me. But doing some research on this, I came across actually this book by Karen Schneider on Google Books, and she actually has a manuscript which attributes this to Umbertus de Romanis, his exposition on the rule of Augustine. So I didn't do any further research, but that might be somewhere to look and see if that indeed is the actual author of that quote. I'm not sure. But it's a very unusual quote, so it kind of jumped out at me. And I'm from California with wine, so you know that also may have jumped out at me. And then he goes on kind of annoyingly to keep this theme up. True love considers nothing hard, nothing bitter, nothing burdensome, nothing lethal. How are iron wounds, pain, and death strong enough to sunder perfect love? Love is an impenetrable breastplate. It despises arrows, knocks away a sword, scoffs at dangers, laughs at death. If there is love, it conquers everything. And there's the phrase, by the way, from Virgil, right? How love conquers everything, referenced presumably because he knew it was Virgil by Peter Chrysologus. Okay. So that's kind of a major theme in Thomas of Ireland. Another major theme, I think I have one more major theme. Another major theme is love as unifying. And so love kind of connects us. A lot of medievals talked about a bond of love, or even Augustine talks about the glue of love. And he references some of those quotes. And so Gregory the Great says in Caritas Ar, the proper nature of love or charity is to foster concord, to preserve united things, to join separated things, to straighten crooked things, etc. And then Peter of Blois, drawing kind of on Augustine originally, says love puts together diverse wills into unity, strengthens a union of diverse souls with the glue of charity, the glutino caritatis. And so in Latin, gluten's glue. So there's gluten, by the way, pure gluten up there, kind of is a glue for wheat. And some people don't like it. Although a paper just came out, I know recently, claiming it's not the gluten, but maybe some carbohydrates is the problem. But anyway, I should be a biologist before I went to philosophy. Finally, another major theme is the love of God in relation to love of neighbor. How, on the one hand, we must love the neighbor in God or on account of God with always kind of our voyage to God in mind. And that's a very Augustine, kind of Augustinian theme. And so Augustine says in the Confessions, which he quotes in Amor G, blessed is the one who loves you, his friend in you, and his enemy on account of you. He alone loses no one dear to him, for whom all are dear in him who's not lost. And then Gregory the Great, in his Moralia, says then something similar. He is more in the love of God who draws very many to the love of him. And Thomas of Ireland references that too. And one little quote, which is kind of interesting in its own right too, which I'll mention, is Amor An from Gregory the Great. Because here there's actually a typo or a misreading, and I don't know if it's from Thomas or maybe from his source, but there's kind of a mistake in his text. And it's kind of interesting to look at that, and that'll also show up in later texts that borrow from him, I think. So the quote is, through the love of God, the love of neighbor is brought forth, and through the love of neighbor, the love of God is fostered. So they're kind of relation mutually, if we love God more, it'll make us love the neighbor. The more we love the neighbor, the more we love God too. And one who neglects to love the neighbor does not know how to truly love God. We then advance more fully in the love of God if in the bosom of this love we are first suckled with charity for the neighbor. And so a lot of the patristics too are very neat in how they have a lot of kind of feminine images that come in, and we see one here. And then the last quote, or last part of this quote, is the love of God begets the love of neighbor, and the love of God fuels the love of neighbor. And the word in Latin there is calcia, faccia, like a fuel or a fire even. Fire's a love of neighbor. And here, there's a probably unintentional change in the Latin is my guess. If you go back to Gregory the Great, and of course, through Chris's work, this was easy to do. He says, the love of God increases out of love of neighbor. So more dei ex proximi amore coalescit instead of coalefacit. So coalescit changes to coalefacit in Thomas of Ireland. And also he takes out the ex. And that really changes the whole meaning, right? Really, it's the love of God is increased out of love of neighbor. But in Thomas of Ireland, that becomes the love of God fuels the love of neighbor. So almost the opposite relation. That's so important, that little shift, because it helps us track later texts, I think. So anyway, I'm going to make use of that. There's one other alteration, too, that's helpful. And in quoting Jerome, Thomas is usually, from my experience, not exhaustive, but he's pretty clear in kind of repeating mostly what the author says. He tends to omit a few words he considers not important, like enim. But other times, he's pretty strict to, you know, keeping to his source. But here, I think to give the context of the original source, he adds the phrase, I am your everything, your all, to assume totus to Ambrose's exposition on the Psalms. So, facilis vox et communis, to assume totus. And so that is, I think, an addition of Thomas of Ireland or one of his immediate sources. And that's unique too. And so I think that helps us track down some of the texts that are influenced by him. He also is pretty comprehensive as well in discussing a lot of medieval sayings on love. Augustine said, my weight is my love. Love kind of pulls me where it goes. He repeats that. We must love without measure. And a kind of a famous maxim of Augustine, love and do what you will. And Thomas repeats that. It's a very interesting context because the context is how sometimes out of love you have to correct, and sometimes like with a staff, but if you do it in a loving manner, it's okay. And sometimes he even talks about how like there are some people who are nice, but it's because they want to, you know, kind of sexually harass a little kid, and that's not really true love. So very interesting context for that famous quote. And I think this goes back to Aristotle, where in Amicitia, or probably through like Cicero, though, he says the beloved is a second self. And that's a famous quote as well. And then there are a few medieval expressions he references as well that are pretty common. The time of need proves a friend. And he loves to quote, for whatever reason, the reference that it's hard for a rich person to have a true friend. They always love you for your money. And he quotes a similar thing like four times or so. So that was a reference quite a bit. And then finally, the opposites, love blinds and love makes us see. So he's pretty comprehensive in his notion of love. He doesn't reference a lot of the scholastic debates, pretty much none of them. So, and even in some cases, he could have done so. We know he had some of Aquinas' texts. There are different debates on love. Should we love God above all things? If so, can we do it by nature? He doesn't mention that. What's the order of love? Should I love myself more than the neighbor? If so, my soul or my body? He doesn't really get into those scholastic debates very much at all. And I'm going to skip now to this. What is left out, though? So as a philosopher, I had the students read Levinas, talks about the excluded other. I don't want to get into all the postmodern stuff, but we can look at that issue. What is left out? And the main thing left out in Thomas of Ireland is that love is often difficult, often requires sacrifice. And so he does not really have the same stress on how love requires suffering, sacrifice. self-denial, and even in some of the mystics giving up one's salvation for others. Chrysostom and a few of the mystics even say, out of love, I would go to hell for love of other people if I had to. So kind of these extreme kind of mystical exuberances. He does have a couple quotes on we need to sacrifice. Sometimes we have to kind of face difficult situations in love. It's not wholly absent, but compare Thomas of Ireland's notion of sacrifice. Holy love does not have frequent gifts and hand cloths and garters and cloths applied to the face and wafers and pre-tasted foods and flatterings and delightful letters. All right. So I'll just kind of, I'll skip the Augustine one. So compare that to Angela of Foligno. It is in the soul, the sign of the very weak love, to want from Christ anything but suffering. It should certainly be possible for the soul to understand that a good master is more pleased with the service of a poor servant who serves him faithfully without pay or benefits than a rich servant who serves him for the wages. So a soul, too, if fattened on the great sweetness of his experience and taste of God, runs lovingly towards him, it does not have as much merit as the one who runs to God and serves him with an equal and similar love, but without consolation and in a state of continual suffering. So much more dramatic in some of the mystics. Similarly, in Beatrice of Nazareth, who talks about the seven ways of love, and in the fifth way, we read, love can be awakened powerfully, arising with overpowering recklessness and great passion. It's as if she wanted to break the heart of the soul by brute force, tear the soul out, lose herself in the purging fire of love. Through all of this, love becomes so great that her soul expands so that she feels that her heart is being painfully wounded over and over. And so it goes on. And so these themes were in Pseudo-Dionysius and Divine Names. He doesn't have that as a reference. So they're kind of missing in some ways in Thomas of Ireland. Now, are these themes chosen accident of history? He made use of what was available at the Sorbonne and of earlier collections, probably in part. As far as I could tell, trying to track down through the Sorbonne catalogs, a lot of the books he doesn't quote weren't at the Sorbonne. So, but there were a few cases where they were there. There are a few works there, like Peter Lombard, Aquinas, and a few others, which he omits, and seemingly for a reason. They're not fitting his theme of what love properly is. So I'm going to skip all this on some of the sources, specific sources missing, and talk about now his influence. So he greatly stresses in how love is sweet, it's easy, it's very powerful, and through his kind of Augustinian Cistercian sources. And what's interesting is that this was a common theme throughout a lot of the scholastics in the Middle Ages. There were a few exceptions. But oftentimes they were kind of more heterodox thinkers, so not utilized as much. But it does come to the fore in the Renaissance, this theme of love as having great suffering, requiring great difficulty at times, what we can call theology of the cross. And there are a lot of references now to Christ on the cross. Our love must emulate that. And I think even it comes out in some of the artwork, too, in the Renaissance, a lot of pictures of the suffering Christ then. Certainly comes out in like Meister Eckhart, Dominican, Catherine of Siena talks about how we kind of have a holy hatred of ourselves. In Luther, and also in the French school of spirituality, like Francis de Sales, his treatise on the love of God, and the French quietists, who really stress how it's better to love someone as if you had like gouty feet, every step is painful, than if it's like very joyful to you. So those themes. Now, could this be a reaction against the perceived overly facile tradition propagated by Thomas of Ireland? Perhaps. I mean, this is going to take a lot of work, and I didn't have the time to trace that. But I had an expert, international expert, Professor Google. So, Google. And so I was able to use Professor Google. And what if you trace now some of these odd quotes in Thomas of Ireland, like the phrase, sweetness is a sister of love, soror amoris, which first, as far as I could tell, is in Thomas of Ireland. This occurs in Bernard of Siena, who actually has a sermon on love. It's a pretty extensive treatise of love. And so that exact phrase is found in Bernard of Siena. And
Bernardino,
actually. Bernardino. Yeah. Okay, Bernardino. Okay, I was wondering about that in my mind.
I've come across him a lot of times.
Okay, Bernardino, thank you. Yeah, thank you. So Bernardino of Siena. And also in a work from 1650, a little later work, Otto Venius of Divine Love, also misattributed to the same person that Thomas of Ireland attributes to Augustine's Confessions. And then another quote on love, where love we saw is like fire, light, honey, wine, and where that it inebriates the mind with pleasant, agreeable delight, with the same misattribution to Rabanus Maurus, is found in Louis de Granada, not his flowers, but his Woods of Sayings of Silva, has a huge section on love, 50 pages or so. And so it references a lot of Thomas of Ireland, I think, there. And then there are a few other kind of unique things, I think, in Thomas of Ireland. The mistranslation we looked at of does love burn or does it increase, that occurs in a number of later authors. It's hard to say exactly the influence, but it may have had influence, certainly, in coloring some of the debates. If a lot of the people heard how over and over again how love is sweet, then there may be a reaction against that, stressing the other side of love that kind of occurs in the Renaissance. So perhaps. Finally, what is his purpose? I don't know. It's hard to say. He certainly doesn't treat love in the scholastic disputation tradition. He has some basic knowledge. He does kind of reference Augustine's notion that we must love God on account of himself, which becomes kind of a common medieval inheritance. That's not to say, though, he couldn't have had a spiritual importance in mind, kind of a formation importance for his students. Did he have in mind the wider preaching milieu? I don't know, but it certainly had an inheritance there as well. So, and that's it.